I'm Frank Vaughn. It's December 4th, 2024, and I want to talk today specifically about two things. First, Trump's threat to invade and take over Canada, what I think it means, my response to it, and of course, the deteriorating geopolitical situation in Ukraine and the Middle East. The first thing I want to make clear is that Donald Trump is joking. There is no imminent American threat to take over Canada. Period. I'm going to read a tweet and then I'll commentate on it. These are my own words, and this is what I put out on X. Trudeau brought us to this. He and his buddy Singh. They mocked and ridiculed everything Trump, and now their narcissistic hubris risks us all. We are a joke. We are to be trolled. That is their legacy. We need adults back in the room. For the last 4 years while Trump was out of office, these characters made clear what their politics were. During the American elections, they made clear what their politics were. They stopped at nothing to make fun of Donald Trump. They doubled down that he would not win the election, and he has won the election. Now we're a joke. Now we are being ridiculed. Now we are being trolled by the impendingly most powerful man, at least in the hemisphere, if not the world. It's debatable nowadays in the world, which is ties into the subject that's coming at the end. Donald Trump tweeted, "O Canada," and he is before a Canadian flag on top of a mountain looking like a conqueror. We're being trolled. And until there's an election in this country and we get a new government, we are not even going to be able to remotely negotiate in good faith with the Americans. There's nothing for Trudeau and Singh to do here. They've already rooked us. They've turned us into an international embarrassment because it's not just Trump that mocks us. Europe has been mocking us for years, as I've covered in previous videos, going back a long ways. They're setting him up because he's such a narcissist so that he could do their dirty work before they just stabbed him in the back on trade deals that he was excluded from. And it's such a long and convoluted story, but their legacy is destruction. Now, the other side of this coin is that all of a sudden, all the post-nationalists that support the left-wing government in this country, which was elected on the idea that Canada has no core identity, I'm not making that up, that is the statement of our prime minister, that we have no core identity and that all we are is a multicultural mishmash, that everybody from Khalistanis to Hindus to Jews to Palestinians, and admittedly the Jews at least have the courtesy to fly Canadian flags and they don't burn our institutions down. They don't attack our universities. Everybody else seems to have this destructive notion that they can just destroy Canada and make it whatever they want. At least the hyphen in Jewish Canadian actually counts for something. But I digress. These national interests that have nothing to do with Canada are allowed expression. These cultural and religious interests are allowed expression in our country and are even encouraged. We have shrines built to the rainbow flag, which is one of the most bizarre social phenomenons to ever sweep a nation. But when we did the Freedom Convoy in actual support of people's individual liberty and rights, those people are still being processed through the court system and put in jail. It was the only movement that was just Canadian flags wall to wall. It was the only movement about Canada, the core of Canada. And it was targeted, demeaned. The military was deployed on it, and it was destroyed. Meanwhile, all these other people, they get free rein. They get the cops bringing them coffee and donuts. They get official endorsement and support. So these very same people who have done this all of a sudden have rediscovered that they're nationalists. They don't even know what that means, but all of a sudden they're dressing themselves up in the Canadian flag. And basically the collective clarion call is, we are not Americans. We will never be Americans. That is our identity. We're not America. You've also got people who are all of a sudden proud monarchists, which has got to be the most cringe-worthy Canadian thing that we do. To be proud of having a king and a governor general, even if they don't rule with a heavy hand. They're still the nominal heads of state. Not even nominal. But I digress. Setting aside for a minute the Americans taking over, whether or not that would be good or bad, because that's the other side of it. People are just like, yeah, come on in. Take us over. Things couldn't get better if you just took us over. There's two sides of the coin here. There's actually three sides. set that aside for a minute, and let's look at the differences between the United States and Canada. They have a better governing system than we do. Our government is archaic. We haven't updated it properly in a very long time. I don't really include the Charter of Rights and Freedoms as an update because we had the Bill of Rights. It was doing fine. And the Charter of Rights and Freedoms actually watered down your rights. And there's one big province in this country that didn't even bother to ratify it. But I think that's outside the scope of this video. Let's just pretend that Canada is properly constituted for a minute and realize that even though, let's talk about one of the benefits, the division of power between the Federation and the provinces and the distinctions between the two, that gives us a little bit of individual autonomy as members of this Federation to develop our provinces in a way that is beneficial and different from each other, to build distinct societies in certain ways. The federal government interferes in provincial jurisdiction all the time. So that's one good thing I can say, but we don't elect our judges. We don't elect our Senate. It's appointed. The people that go to the Senate serve for decades, and there's no way for you or me as so-called members of democracy to do anything about them. We can't pull them down. They barely show up for work. And I would predict that when Poilievre forms government, which he will, we're going to find out just how oppositional the Senate actually is. We're going to be fighting with the leftist legacy in this country for a decade or more, if we're smart enough to finish the fight and try and fight it out. Because people, with their short attention spans, might actually get sick of the fight before we've even begun to win. People talk about Poilievre being weak and milquetoast and all these other things. He's certainly not as weak and milquetoast as Aaron O'Toole. He's an improvement on Andrew Scheer, who was listening to bad advice. And he has to win an election, and then he's got to fight this arcane and ancient system that we live under. We don't have an elected Senate. We elect our legislators once every 4 years, and that's it. We have no right of recall. There's nothing we can do about them. They rule uncontested. It doesn't matter the public will. The courts are captured. There's no direct democracy. We don't have ballot initiatives. Now, what do the Americans have? Man, the Americans have the popular vote represented in the House. They have the Electoral College, which balances out the executive. They have the Senate, which represents the land and equality, true equality. Each component of the American system represents a different type of equality. I'd go as far as to call it equity, but it's not really equity, it's equality. They elect their sheriffs. They elect their judges. The states have more rights. The states have their own houses. They have their own governors. Getting big sweeping changes implemented, big new taxation, is quite hard in the United States because the people have so much power, not just through their votes and not just through their ballots, which are often a mile long because direct democracy is a thing. So you want to vote on legalization of weed? You can do that. You want to vote on reproductive rights? You can do that. You can get ballot initiatives done. You can bypass the government, and you can get it done yourself as people. That's just scratching the surface of how brilliantly designed the United States Republic actually is. And it has its problems too, but nowhere near as many as this corrupt country that we live in. And look, I get that you care about Canadian sovereignty. I understand. But most of you didn't care about it very much. When we gave it away to the United Nations or the World Economic Forum, you didn't care when China poured $1 billion a year into our universities and captured our intellectual trust. You didn't care about it when the Chinese Communist Party was buying up our mineral wealth, deploying their agents on our soil, opening police stations to harass Canadian citizens. You didn't care about that. You didn't care before that when it was the Americans buying everything up. You didn't care when Diefenbaker destroyed our aerospace industry and started the deconstruction of the once powerful Canadian military. You didn't care as the post-national state was declared by Trudeau and his ally Singh. where they said that every culture in the world mattered except for yours. But now, because Donald Trump is making jokes and trolling you, you care all of a sudden? You're all of a sudden for God and King? Look at what we did to our national anthem. Look at the assault on God and King. And all of a sudden, you people flipped your script and now you're loyalists? It's absurd. The Americans aren't taking over, period. Worry more about China. Worry about the WEF. Worry about the United Nations. We're being mocked and ridiculed. We're reaping what Trudeau and Singh have sown. The United States doesn't want us. They've got debt problems and systemic problems of their own. Why would they want to add ours in there? Doesn't make any sense. So everybody just needs to calm down and gain some perspective. Much more importantly is this geopolitical situation in Ukraine. Now I'm gonna edit in a video. I'm not gonna put it on screen right now. I usually do this stuff live, but I'm gonna show you the collapsing Ukrainian front line. It's only gonna get worse because Ukraine can't win the war. They don't have enough bodies. They've killed all their young men. And they're looking to kill even more younger men in a vain effort to try and stop what is happening, which is the Russian victory. Zelensky is very unpopular. He couldn't survive the next election to save his life. His support is roughly 16%, the last poll that I read. And the vast majority, we're talking two-thirds of the Ukrainian population, wants peace more than anything. They want to get back to the table. They want to get the war done. It's the same in the United States. Public opinion is shifting because people are actually waking up to the reality of how much danger we are in right now. Those missiles that everybody talks about that are being launched into Russia, it's NATO troops that are firing those missiles at the behest of Ukraine, but the logistical support, it's their finger on the button. Today I read about how the Russians fired warning shots at a German helicopter that was flying too close to one of their boats. Anything goes wrong right now and it starts the spiral of escalation. The spiral of escalation is already ongoing, but there's a very definitive marker in time, the point of no return, which we have not yet reached. You've heard about the Russians using, and I don't know if the media has really explained this too well, and I honestly don't know if it's been explained that well in the alternative media either, because I haven't read a lot of analysis on it. But these missiles, called Oreshniks, if I'm pronouncing that right, they go into space. They fly at Mach 10 plus. Everyone contains within it multiple independently targetable reentry vehicles. What that means is that there are many projectiles in one missile, and each one of them can be targeted. What the Russians did was they completely obliterated a missile factory in Ukraine. The kinetic energy that these are capable of unleashing without nuclear anything involved, without splitting atoms, is the equivalent of tactical nuclear weapons. They can hit any capital in the world that they want. They can hit anywhere in the world. They can hit the Minuteman silos in Montana in 15 minutes. They can hit London, and I think it's 20. They can obliterate the Ukrainian government whenever they choose. And you might ask, well, why haven't they if that's true? Because they don't want to end the world. The Russians don't want to rule over the ashes. They're not doing the escalation thing that NATO's doing, which is trying to goad them into starting this war's post-point of no return phase. They're exercising restraint. And they're winning the war. These Oreshniks are game changers, just like the other missiles. Nobody in the world has missile technology as good as the Russians do right now. All those strike groups, all those carriers, they don't have a single defensive system that can stop the Oreshniks from sinking them all. All those F-35s, all those planes, all the thousands of people and lives that are on those carriers sailing around the world, every single one of them can be on the bottom of the ocean, and all the Russians have to do is will it. They just need to know the location data, and boom, it's done. There's no defense. Those cool little Gatling guns that you see and all the different technologies on the Gerald Ford, none of it can do a damn thing about these Oreshniks. So that's where we're at. A hot war. It's the end of everything. Now we move our attention south, where Turkish intelligence is directing a drive against the Syrian government. You have American warthogs doing strafing runs against Iranian and Russian-backed forces of Assad and their allies. The Russians are flying aerial missions doing bombing runs. And the Americans are doing strafing missions against Russian-backed forces. They're flying in the same space, shooting at each other's proxies. How long can this go on? How many days can we keep doing this before a point of no return event is reached? I've talked about before how we're not the good guys here, and maybe there are no good guys. Let's take that off the table. Let's say the Russians are bad and we're bad. Let's say we're not bad. We're just competing interests. Let's look at the facts. There was a Ukrainian, a properly constituted Ukrainian government in 2013 under Yanukovych. It was overthrown in a Western-backed coup, and illegal, unconstitutional elections were organized in which the party that Vladimir Zelensky heads came to power. Their government is illegally constituted. Within its core are die-in-the-wool Nazis, real legit, real-life Nazis. We brought one of them here to Canada and celebrated them, applauded them in Parliament like a bunch of fools. Another reason why we're international jokes. Zelensky hasn't even faced an election because he's managed to suspend them. They're rounding up their own citizens, forcing them to go to war against their will like a bunch of common thugs. Peace has been on the table multiple times, and it's been torpedoed by the West. We're bad people supporting a bad regime, risking the entire world while we're doing it. That's the truth of the situation. Everything else is propaganda, and nothing else matters because the survival of the world is paramount. Now, I'm looking forward to Tucker Carlson announced last night that he flew to Moscow to interview Lavrov. Look, we got to get to Inauguration Day. I think the only reason the world is still here right now is because Trump won the election. I think if Harris wins, we've already spiraled out of control, and the point of no return has already been crossed, and we are close to a month into the full World War III scenario. There's no winnable war here for the West. There's only acceptance of each other's spheres of influence and the national existence of the Russian people, the Chinese people, and any other power that possesses nuclear weapons must be respected or the world burns. There's plenty of world to go around. We can all prosper here. There's an age of expansion beckoning just over the horizon. Like I've talked about before, getting into space, colonizing the moon, colonizing Mars, organizing ourselves about becoming multiplanetary, solving a lot of the medical problems, whether it's paralysis, blindness, hearing, you name it. We're on the cusp of greatness. Solving the food supply, reining in the food industry, the so-called food industry, the pseudo-food industry in the United States, which is once we do that, things start to fall in place everywhere else. We're on the cusp of so many amazing developments and things. The true revolution we've all been waiting for our entire lives, or at least those of us who are in the know and are thinking people. We're on the cusp of it. But before we do anything, we have to save the world. And there's a lot of optimism out there. I mean, the markets are usually smart and wise. And you watch how the money moves, and you can usually tell how the public feels about the future. And for some reason, the markets don't seem to be very responsive to the fact that we are on the cusp of Armageddon, essentially. And that kind of worries me. There's an abundance of optimism in the face of a lot of worrying developments. it's one of the biggest reasons that I have cause for concern, that I think maybe every single tomorrow is in more jeopardy than people are crediting to it. So anyway, as we approach the 20-minute mark, let's just realize where we're at and what's important. This joking that Trump is doing, this mocking of Trudeau, that's Trudeau's just desserts. And unfortunately, we have to all take a bite. They're not going to take over. And recognizing that our governing institutions are absolute shit isn't betraying Canada. If you care about Canada and you want to move Canada forward into the future, you should care about the fact that our institutions suck terribly. This country is so backwards, it needs an upgrade. We need Canada 2.0 if we're going to survive. That's if we survive as a federation, because we're fracturing already. The Bloc Québécois is set to sweep into power in Quebec, both provincially and federally. I wouldn't blame them if they pushed for another referendum to try and extract as much money out of this country as they can. They've done a good job, folks, whether you like them or not. I don't. They've done a great job using their province as a vehicle to milk the rest of this country dry. Maybe we are at the end of the rope. Maybe independent entities will rise up out of it, or maybe we can reconstitute. Maybe we can upgrade Canada. It's a difficult road. It's going to require a lot of vision. The public's going to have to wake up to a lot of truth. But you're angry about the wrong things, and you're loyal for the wrong reasons. You've been sold out for a long time. This joke, this mockery that Donald Trump is engaging in, is just not the thing that everybody should be getting so up in arms about. It shouldn't be the thing that reawakens your nationalism and all of a sudden you rediscover that you're a Canadian and you're loyal to God and King. Jesus, it is just... And when I say that, I'm not taking the name in vain. It's like a silent prayer. I cannot believe... I should say a spoken prayer. I cannot believe how foolish we are, how reactive we are, how emotional we are. It's like we can't think. Whether it's the nationalists, whether it's the ones that want America to take over, or whether it's the God and King monarchist people who all of a sudden rediscovered themselves, they're all the wrong takes. Anyway, I'm Frank Vaughn. I'll see you in the next one. Did you know that I have a website? FrankVaughn.ca, the ultimate repository for all of my work, and a backup location just in case the censors come for me again. And if you like the content, please consider using the donate link in one of the options available. There are no paywalls, there is no advertising, and there is no Patreon, and I intend to keep it that way. Thank you for your time and your consideration.